Good morning, Hare Krishna. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to so many devotees, something about Bhagavatam. Today is very interesting because not only is the verse itself in Bhagavatam have different aspects, as Prabhupada himself points out in the purport to the last verse, 22. It's 20, 21, 22, no? Is there? So which verse did they write? Sitsuta Uvacha. So that would be good. That's the verse that has the short purport, correct? But not only that, but it's also the day of the celebration of the marriage between Srimati Tulsi Devi and Shalagram Srila. And it's also the appearance or disappearance, I'm not sure, of Srila Nimbarkacharya. And it's also the day of Sri Krishna Rasayatra. So what should we do? So many things are there. So what I did was I wrote some things down in order to try to get through something of each of these different aspects. I have some material prepared. So with your kind permission, in order for things to move along nicely, so we won't go too much overtime, or at all overtime, you'll find that I'm sometimes reading. So reading is not the best, most exciting way of presenting a public lecture. But at the same time, I'm going to do a little of that. Some impromptu speaking, but also some reading will be there. But unless I tell you a reference, it means I'm reading what I wrote yesterday. So it's at least it's creative. Hare Krishna. So we'll read the I'll read the first two texts, and then we'll chant together the text that's there. Text 20. Shri Rava Raja Vacha Katam Tha Asurambha Vam Apo Yau Patikam Guru Indrena Prapita Satyam Kim Tat Sadhu Kritam Hitai. Translation. King Parikshit inquired, "My dear Lord, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with a demoniac mentality. Why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? Did they perform any rituals or pious activities?" Text 21. Ime shraddha date brahman rishayo hi maya saha parijnaya bhagavam tanno vyakya yutam yutum ardhasi. Translation. My dear brahmana, I and all the sages present with me are eager to know about this. Therefore, O great soul, kindly explain to us the reason. Now we'll chant together. Sri Sutu Vacha.
Sri Sutu Vacha.
Actually, I was thinking of talking about the other aspects first, but maybe it's Krishna's arrangement that I made this mistake, because we'll try to finish the Bhagavatam part a little earlier so we can talk a little bit about the other observances today. But this way, just in case it goes on too long, at least we're covering the Bhagavatam. Is that okay? All right. Sri Sutu Uvacha. Tad Vishnu Ratasya. Sa. Badarayanir Vacho Isham Yadritam Alpam Arthavat Sabajayan San Nibditena Chaitasa Jagada Satrayana Sarva Darshanah Sri Sutu Uvacha Tad Vishnu Ratasya Sabadarayanir
Tad Vishnu Ratasya
Vacho nisham yradri tamal pamartava. Sabachayan sandibritena chetasa. Chagada satrayana salva darshanaha. Tadvishnuratasya sabadaraya nir. Vacho nisham radritam alpamartava. Sabajayan sannibritena chetasa. Jagada satrayana salva darshana. Shishuta uvacha. Shishuta Goswami said, Tat those Vishnu Ratasya of Maharaj Pariksit. Sa he. Badarayani Shukadev Goswami. Vachaha words. Nishamya hearing. Adritam respectful. Alpam brief. Artavat meaningful. Sabajayansan praising. Nibritena chetasa with great pleasure. Jagada replied. Satrayana Oshonaka. Sarvadarshana who is aware of everything. Shishuta Goswami said, O great sage Shonaka, after hearing Maharaj Pariksit speak respectfully and briefly on topics essential to hear, Shukadev Goswami, who is well aware of everything, praised his endeavor with great pleasure and replied. Short purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Pariksit's question was very much appreciated by Shukadev Goswami because although it was composed of a small number of words, it contained meaningful inquiries about how the sons of Diti, although born as demons, became demigods. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur stresses that even though Diti was very envious, her heart was purified because of a devotional attitude. Another significant topic, it is that although Kasyapa Muni was a learned scholar and was advanced in spiritual consciousness, he nonetheless fell a victim to the inducement of his beautiful wife. All these questions were posed in a small number of words, and therefore Shukadev Goswami was very much appreciated Maharaj Pariksit's inquiry. Translation again, Sri Shuta Goswami said, O great sage, Sonaka, after hearing Maharaj Pariksit speak respectfully and briefly on topics essential to hear, Shukadev Goswami, who was well aware of everything, praised his endeavor with great pleasure and replied. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jananjana Shalakya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is the main context here, is that the question was just a few words, but it was just like Diti was pregnant with Maruts. The question was pregnant with meaning, with deep meanings inside the question. That may not be so apparent to us, but Srila Prabhupada, and referring to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they bring out some of the implications of the question. The question again, my dear Lord, Maharaj Pariksit is inquiring, Due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with a demoniac mentality. Why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? Did they perform any rituals or pious activities? The first part of the question is the question itself, and the second part is a conjecture, is an attempt to answer his own question, but he's just suggesting maybe she performed some rituals or pious activities. So the idea of it being very brief, there's a Prabhupada twice in the short purport this morning, he stresses that point, that it was just a few words. So that reminds us of Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, mitam cha sadam cha vachuhi vag mita iti. A central truth spoken concisely is true eloquence. We'll come back to this point regarding concentrated meanings, or as we say, the question being pregnant with meaning. First point, this could be a whole class or a whole seminar, so I'll just sort of touch on it and then leave you all to think about it. This is a question of how different tattvas or different moods or different mentalities that seem so opposed to one another can become interchangeable. And there's a deeper question, this gets very philosophical, deeper question, of how the two, what's sometimes described as the fundamental Vedic ontological categories, it means the two different kinds of existence, namely spirit and matter, how do they interact, or do they interact? How do they seem to come together, even in our own conditioned state? We have material body and we're just moving, it seems like it's one. And in Western philosophy, they often decided it's actually the same thing, spirit and matter, because we don't accept that. There are two different tattvas, two different types of energy coming from Krishna. So, as I warned you, I'd have to read a little bit to keep the class moving forward. So Prabhupada mentioned that those who are devotees of the Lord, actually in the purport to verse 19, apparently even demons can be elevated to positions as demigods when their atheistic character is reformed. There are two kinds of men throughout the universe. Those who are devotees of Lord Vishnu are called demigods, and those who are just the opposite are called demons. Even the demons can be transformed into demigods, as the statement of this verse proves. In Bhagavad Gita, you have dvau vima purusha loke kshara chakshara eva cha kshara sarvani bhutani kutasto kshadas uchite. There are two kinds of people, the fallible and the infallible. Actually, I'm thinking of a different verse, yabhutau sarga loke smin. Daiva Asura Evacha, in the 16th chapter, the more specific distinction is made between the demon and the devotee. These are two kinds of mentalities. Krishna speaks about the first, the divine mentality, then he goes into great detail about the demoniac mentality. So, it may be interesting to note how these different tattvas, or different, in this case, moods, are interchangeable. On the most fundamental level, matter can be transformed into spirit. This is affected by jagya, as described in Bhagavad Gita 4.24, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir, Brahmagno Brahmanahutam, Brahmaivatena Gantavyam, Brahmakarna Samadhina, that the devotees of the Lord, they'll certainly reach the spiritual kingdom. Why is that? Because of their full contribution to spiritual activities, in which that which is offered is absolute. And the conclusion is absolute, and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. No, it's dravya, it's you're offering clarified butter and fire and cloth and incense? Is this material? How is it the same spiritual? It because it becomes transformed by reconnecting these items to the source of both spirit and matter. Hare Krishna. And also we have the whole idea of Yukta Vairagya, that this is in Bhagavad Gita in 18th chapter, that one even by practicing his own profession, worshipping the Lord by means of his own natural activity, can attain perfection. And then we also have in Bhagavatam, in first canto, Ivam Rinam Karma Kriya Yoga Sarva Samshrita Hitavaha Taivatma Minashayam Kalpante Kalpita Pare. That when all a man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those very activities which caused his perpetual bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work. So not only are there the objects, but also activities themselves, they may, without connected to being connected with Krishna, they're material. The same activity connected to Krishna, the activity becomes spiritual. And the effect is spiritual. The effect is purifying. They're putting the iron rod in the fire, Prabhupada would say. Is it iron rod or is it fire? And you might say, well, it looks like an iron rod and it still has the shape, so it must be iron. And what did Prabhupada say? Touch it. If that's how you have to learn, do like that. You touch it, you see the effect is fire. So although things that we do and people that we see and objects that we use may seem ostensibly to be material, actually, if they're yukta, if they're connected with the Lord, yoga yukta, linked with the Supreme, then there's a certain aspect which still remains material, like these bodies. I just turned 70 years old a few months ago. It's quite an amazing thing. And I'm getting more and more indications that the body is not going to go on for a long time more. So in that sense, it's still physical material. But if I'm a good boy, if I'm a good follower of Srila Prabhupada, or at least I'm sincerely endeavoring, then even the body itself, externally it may act materially, it certainly gets sick and all that, but the effect of the body will not be just another series of entanglement of creating more bodies. No, this is spiritual. It will be a purifying arrangement rather than an entangling machine. So let me read a little bit what I wrote. The demoniac versus divine mentalities can also convert and transform into one another. So it's related. In other words, underneath it all, you have the two fundamental tattvas of spirit and matter. But then you have the divine mentality. Mahatmanastu mamparta, daivim prakriti mashrita. The divine mentality in Bhagavad Gita 9:13 is described as one who is sheltered, who is taken shelter of this fundamental tattva called spirit. The Daivi Prakriti, Ashrita, they're sheltered in that. And the other number, the demoniac mentality, of course we go to chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita, Mohad Gahit Vashad Grahan. That means they're clutching, they become too attached to the asat, to the temporary. And therefore they're really full of anxieties. Well, I have to confess to you, I still have some anxiety. Don't tell anybody, you never know it. But the demon has so much more, full of anxiety, because he's trying to take shelter of asat, of that which is temporary, beginning with his own body. So, as we may refer back to the wonderful story which we didn't talk about yet, we may not have time, of Tulsi and Shalagram Shila. Very intriguing, mysterious series of events. I hope we can talk a little about that. The part where Lord Shiva confirms how two contradictory mentalities can combine. This is part of, this is from a quote from Amala Bhakta Prabhu's narration of the care and the story of Tulsi Devi. So this is the background. This is Lord Shiva speaking. In your former birth, that was as Sankachuda, in he's talking to Sankachuda, and your former birth was that of Sudama, one of the main friends of Krishna. In Goloka, you were very religious and were the chief cowherd friend, the chief cowherd friend of Lord Krishna. By Radha's curse, you have become lord of the demons here. But you are also a Vaishnav. You can see this crossover here. We have the personality of Shankarachuda. We're also, we were hearing about Chitraketu becoming Vitrasur. Okay, I'm not, next question, I'm not going to really get too detailed about. These are things to think about. Is that we question the Adam and Eve explanation of original sin, since we find it difficult to understand how karma, whether sinful or pious, is inherited from one's material parents. Yet here we learn that the Maruts were sanctified by the pious devotional mood of their mother, Diti. And this despite the fact that her devotion to Vishnu fell short of pure bhakti. Why was that? Because she wanted to get a son who could kill Indra. It's not exactly pure bhakti. That would be devotional service influenced by the motive ignorance. We are also informed that even a low-born Vaishnav can purify his entire family. This is Prahlad Maharaj in Srimad Bhagavatam. How is it? Punati sakulam natu buddhi maniha. That, but a, even if he's born in a family of dog eaters, he can purify his whole family, whereas a brahmana puffed up with false prestige cannot even purify, cannot even liberate his own self. So, but the idea of a Vaishnav can purify his family. So do you inherit the Sukriti or the sin? Even Vedic social norms held that the son responsible for his deceased father is responsible for the deceased father's debt. And then again, the first of today's verses assumes that one's birth is associated with one's mentality. It says, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with a demoniac mentality. So we usually hear the birth is not so important, but now we're hearing, due to their birth. So the birth has some meaning. We can't completely negate that. So at least to some extent, we may acknowledge an hereditary aspect to karma, but within limits, not that all of humanity is condemned due to the mistake of Adam and Eve. It doesn't make that much sense. Actually, the answer to Maharaj Pariksit's question was already basically given at the end of the introduction to this chapter, and for that matter, confirmed by yesterday's speaker. The answer was that Diti was performing devotional service, so that affected the situation of her son, who became 7 and then became 49 with some help from Indra. Yesterday the whole pastime was described. And that was also confirmed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as Prabhupada pointed out in the purport. The other day, Kadamba Kanana Swami reminded us how early in the movement, Srila Prabhupada advised his Grihastha disciples to chant 50 rounds before conceiving a child. That was in the early days, everything was very lenient. So now it must be 150 or something like that. I don't want to make any angry hostess nervous, but. That way, one would beget a much more pious or even devotional offspring. Is that also a question of inherited karma? Not exactly, in this case. You see, the thing gets a little nuanced. Another point comes up here is that the Bhagavad Gita 240, that famous Nahabhi Krama Natyosti, Pratyava Yona Vidyate, Svapam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahatobaya. Even a little devotional service, alpam, saves one from the most dangerous kind of fear. Now, Prabhupada doesn't say what is that most dangerous. He doesn't say in Bhagavad Gita, but in Bhagavatam or Ishopanishad, he does mention, now you all know, that's to lose the human opportunity in life and take birth in lower species. That's the most dangerous type of fear. So, by dint of her slight deviation, Diti lost the material purpose of her great vow. In other words, even if one slips from devotional service by some slight or great deviation, but whatever bhakti one has developed is not lost for the future. In other words, she failed to engender a son who would be Indra's mortal enemy. However, whatever bhakti, in other words, the material aspect, that was lost. She didn't get what she wanted. Not only didn't she get what she wanted, but she even lost the desire for what she wanted previously by the purification of bhakti. But the point is, she didn't get it. But the spiritual aspect, that didn't become spoiled. Whatever bhakti she performed suffered, quote, no loss or diminution, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 240. Everything became harmonized, reconciled. As Prahlad Maharaj prayed to the Lord, and I don't have time to quote, but he says that by practicing devotional service, people will naturally think of one another's welfare. And they will wish, everyone will become the well-wisher of everyone else. This is Srila Prabhupada, your ever well-wisher, he would say. So as noted at the beginning of today's class, Srila Prabhupada recommended his inquiry as quite meaningful, although composed, in other words, his meaning, Maharaj Pariksit's question, as very meaningful, although composed of a small number of words. After referring to the paradoxical conversion of demons into devotees, Srila Prabhupada suggests another topic embedded in the verse, namely the warning it implies regarding the danger of fall down. In this regard, there's an awful lot. It's a whole five classes on that, the dangers of fall down. There are so many warnings that we have in so many places. I wouldn't even know where to begin, so I won't. I'll just give one reference. Nam Vladnir Pramata Nama Grita Kumba Sama Puman Sutam Api Raho Jayan Anyada Yavad Artakrit. Yavad Artakrit. Only do that for very important business. What is that doing? Now, we're in the modern world and this has become so delicate and confusing, especially outside of India. But a lot of these directions are directed towards those who have men's bodies. You can take it or leave it. I hope you don't leave it. So the instruction is that only talk to women for something very important business. Don't even be alone with your own daughter in a secluded place. Sutam api, not even own daughter. Jayad Raho Jayad. Why is that? Because Grita Kumbha, the man, is compared to a pot of butter. And you put that on the fire, it so easily melts. And what is the fire? Pramada. Pramada means it makes you crazy to the gents. I'm saying, ladies can also pay attention. That Agni, Nanvagdi, indeed, Nanu Agni is indeed Agni, Pramada Nama. So woman is called or compared to fire, and man is compared to a butter pot. So there are many, many warnings in different shastras about that. And there are many situations where we heard in the story that we were hearing in the pastime how Chitraketu lamented his submissive, his acquiescence to his wife. Actually, here we're talking about Kashyapa. Kashyapa, he lamented that he became seduced, we can say, by both the external and the more subtle attractive aspects, how his wife looked, how she acted, how she talked. And he regretted that. And in the Bhagavatam, there are so many histories of that, where a husband or a man just laments how much he yielded to the attraction of woman. So it's a very central theme. This attraction between men and women is the binding force. The material world is called Maitunya Agara. So we should never become, complacent in that area. We should never become complacent. We may be, for so many years, I just don't go that way. I don't think that way. But this may just be the year when you get a special test. And it may be very subtle. So we have so many instances, even within our society. So we should never become complacent in this regard. For instance, we have King Yayati to his wife Devayani. Even he becomes older and wiser. He even went on to return his youth for the old age accepted by his ideal son Puru. We'd say King Yayati, in his maturity, he condemned himself. He felt so much remorse. So Maharaj's Parikshit's two-part question, it begins with, why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? All right, that was the basis of our initial discussion of how opposing energies, truths, or moods can become interrelated. It also related to the complicated idea of inherited karma. But then Maharaj Parikshit follows his question up with a second query, a second question, which is actually like a conjecture on his part. A good speculation, but maybe not exactly to the mark. Did they perform any rituals or pious activities? This, in turn, reminds us of the beginning of the current canto. The beginning of the sixth canto, a whole chapters are devoted to that. Maharaj Parikshit was concerned. He, after hearing how people are tortured by the Yamadutas because of their sinful activities, he was saying, how can this be avoided? So now this relates to Maharaj Parikshit's conjecture. He said, well, did he perform some rituals or some pious activities? Or we can also add some sort of atonement? Or how did this conversion take place? How did the Maruts that were at least technically demons, how did they become devotees? So this is very so the whole beginning of the sixth canto gets into that, because Maharaj Parikshit wanted, being a Vaishnava, he was very compassionate. He didn't like that people had to suffer like that. So then he was tested by the guru, Shukadeva Goswami. He says, well, by prayaschita, by performing atonement, everything, then you avoid the suffering. But then Maharaj Parikshit, manye kunjada sochavat. I think that's like the bathing of an elephant. That's not adequate. Tell me something else. Then next test, testing the disciple, he suggested knowledge, spiritual knowledge. But even that, as described in Bhagavatam, doesn't completely relieve one of all the tendencies towards sin. So then it's kechid kevalaya bhakta narayana padayana agundumvanti karsneya. What is it? Iva bhaskara. Nihara iva bhaskara. That even the first rays of the sun, so even the first rays of bhakti, they eliminate all vestiges of sin. Bhakti is the panacea, we say. It's the cure-all. It, at the very root, it not only, like you say, Jesus died for my sins. That's okay. He's relieving you. You're relieved. You're excused from the sinful reaction. We have that also in Hare Krishna. You get initiated by the guru. You put the banana in the fire. I always like to tell the funny story. When I got initiated, everyone was putting the banana in the fire, but due to my previous birth, I was holding on to the banana. I wouldn't put it in the fire. I'm just making that up. But then for that moment, you have a clean slate. You're relieved. The guru is your Jesus. He's relieved you of all the sinful reaction, but you have to work on it. You have to work on it. You have to chant nicely and follow nicely, because the seeds of sinful desire, you know, the cycle of sin, the bija of sin is still there. The tendency of sin is still there. So how do we purify that? Only by pure devotional service, and that's what we're working on. So bhakti transcends even the infallible justice known as the laws of karma, and is far superior to any material act of atonement. So this also is implied by the conjecture of Maharaj Parikshit. Did they perform some kind of atonement, or how did it go exactly? Did they perform, talking about the Maruts, did they perform any rituals or pious activities? The same question came up will come up in the next canto about Vitrasura. Vitrasura is a demon. How is he also a devotee? How does that work? So there is this crossover. I'll say a couple of things. What should we do? Should we have this? Do you want to have some question, or do you want to hear a little bit about the? I'm not so expert on it, but I took some notes from Amala Bhakti's narration about Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha, marriage of Tulsi and Shalagram. Should we do that? All right. I know everybody likes. Yesterday, Bhakti Sundar Maharaj, he is very expert in Leela. He knows so many Leelas, Chaitanya Leela, Krishna Leela. But he pointed out, and this was very encouraging to me, that both are very important, both Leela and Tattva. Janma karma chame divyam ivam yaveti tattva taha. You know Leela, oh, I know Krishna. He steals butter, dances with the gopis, and does all these amazing, funny things. But tattva taha, you have to know him tattva taha. At least before we go to Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Vrindavan tattva retires, you can say, in terms of your consciousness. All right, so there's Sudam. Sudam is the chief cowherd friend in Goloka Vrindavan of Krishna. We say in modern American English, I don't even know if they still talk this way. It's so much fun getting old. You have the language changes. You don't even know if they still talk. But we used to say that he had a crush. And most of you are not familiar with this. He had a crush on Tulsi. in Goloka Vrindavan. In other words, he had an attraction. He wanted to marry her, but he was afraid to make any overt approach because he was afraid of Srimati Radharani, that she might not like to, him to do that. This is Sudan. So, but he ended up being cursed by Srimati Radharani to become demon, or ostensibly a demon, by the name of Shankarchuda. Now, why did Srimati Radharani curse him? Because Srimati Radharani found Krishna with a different gopi. I think her name was Viraja. And he cursed that gopi to become a river, the famous Viraja River. So Srimati Radharani, we don't want her to become angry. She's tremendous power. So this was, and then she was also chastising Krishna. Now Krishna's best friend, well, your best friend, you defend your best friend. He didn't like that. He said, no, Srimati Radharani, how can you chastise Krishna? Krishna's the emblem of everything. He's the best of everything. How can you? And Srimati Radharani chastised Sudan and frightened him. So he started running away. But as he was running away, he continued chastising Srimati Radharani. That was too much. So she cursed him to become demon in this world by the name of Shankarchuda. So that's the background of Sudan. And Shankarchuda is the son of Dambi. But then Radharani is still Radharani. She's very soft-hearted. And after she cursed him, she was thinking, oh no, why did I do that? No, no, come back. You don't have to go. But somehow it was a done thing. So, and it was also ultimately the supreme will. So actually, Sudan will satisfy his desire to marry Tulsi, but in this world, as Tulsi Devi, and he's Shankarchuda. Now, Tulsi Devi comes to this world before she's in the form of a plant or a tree, or also a river. She's known as Gandaki also. That's also there. So Krishna slays Shankarchuda by means of Lord Shiva. He gives Lord Shiva a trident, a special trident, and some other secrets how to slay Shankarchuda. Shankarchuda is so powerful demon. He's actually a devotee. But he's slain by Lord Shiva. It was Lord Vishnu, or Krishna, did that. And not only did he do that, but then he disguises himself as Shankarchuda and has intimacy with Tulsi. Now, Tulsi is not yet in the form of Tulsi plant. She's like the expansion of Goddess of Fortune. She appeared in this world. There's a whole story why that happened. So this made Tulsi Devi, in the form of a human, very angry. She said, you're so hard-hearted to Krishna. First you killed my husband, then you pretend to be my husband, you trick me like this. But actually in her heart, try to understand, Tulsi wanted to marry Krishna, or at least Narayan. She didn't want actually anything else, but at the same time, the way the Leela unfolds is that she happily marries Shankarchuda. There's a whole exchange there. So Tulsi Devi said, Krishna, you're so hard-hearted, you become a stone. That's how Krishna became, or Narayan becomes Shalagram. So when we hear about the marriage between Shalagram and Tulsi, it's actually the marriage between a great devotee of the Lord and the Lord, even though it takes place in this world. How did Tulsi come to this world even before taking on the aspect of the Gandaki River and the plant? As Amala Bhakta Prabhu narrates, I don't have time to read this, but basically Dharma Dvaj and Kusha Dvaj. Dvaj, what is Dvaj's flag, no? So two flags. Mother and father. Dharmadvaj and Kushadvaj performed harsh asceticism and worshipped Goddess Lakshmi. So by the mercy of Goddess Lakshmi, they acquired spiritual merits, they begot children. King Dharmadvaj, here it says married to Madhavi actually, after some time she became pregnant with a partial incarnation of the goddess Lakshmi, etc., etc. And that's how Tulsi Devi said, her complexion was white like a champak flower and her hair looked beautiful. Because her beauty was incomparable, sages called her Tulasi. So that's how Tulsi came. But she's not a plant. She doesn't have that aspect yet. Now, the role of Tulsi, he was not really cursed, but actually blessed by Lord Krishna's followers. I'll just read this short thing and then we can finish. Oh, and then there's Nimbakacharya. Oh my God. So seeing her so upset, Narayan, who is an ocean of mercy, tried to console her according to Dharmika rules. He said, "O exalted one, you performed austerities for a long time to get me as your husband. And Shankachuta also performed austerities for a long time to get you as his wife." Remember, Shankachuta was Sudam in Galop. "By that austerity he fulfilled his wish. It was then necessary for me to fulfill your wish. For this reason, I did what I did. I disguised myself as Shankachuta, etc. Now I leave you. Now leave your earthly body and assume a spiritual body and be married to me. Be like Lakshmi. Your body will become famous, a famous river known as Gandaki, a virtuous, pure, and transparent river in this holy land of India. Your hairs will be transformed into holy trees. Since the trees will be born of you, they will be known as Tulsi trees. All the residents of the three worlds will perform worship with the leaves and flowers of this tree. Thus you, Tulsi, will reign as the best among trees and flowers." So the marriage of Tulsi and Shalagram Shil is actually a fulfillment of the first and real wish of Tulsi Devi, to marry not only the Narayan expansion, but Krishna himself. Nimbakacharya. 1 minute, he deserves 100 years. But we'll give just a little something. Of course, I'm taking the easy approach is from the book of Mahanidhi Swami, the Gaudiya Vaishnav Samadhis in Vrindavan. So Nimbakacharya preached Krishna consciousness about 300 years before the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Shiva appeared before Nimbarka one time, instructing him to take initiation from the four Kumaras. So Nimbakacharya is the representative of the Kumara, the Sanat, Kumara Sampradaya. They were meditating nearby. Now it's interesting how Lord Shiva, he has his own sampradaya, but he's very liberal. He didn't say, no, you take initiation in my sampradaya, like the Rudra sampradaya. He said, no, take initiation in the Chatusan, in the Kumara sampradaya. Following the teachings of Sanat Kumara Sangita, he worshipped Radha and Krishna with great love. Soon Radha and Krishna appeared before Nimbarka. Then the divine couple displayed their unified form as Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And then Lord Chaitanya instructed, "Nimbarka, in the future when I begin my Sankirtan movement, I will personally preach the perfect transcendental philosophy of Achintyabheda, etc., etc. From you, Nimbarka, I will take two important principles. The necessity of taking shelter of Srimati Radharani and the high esteem of the Vraja Gopi's love for Krishna." So, to cut to the chase, as we say in modern American English, if they still talk, that they still say. Of the different sampradayas, the Kumara or Nimbarka sampradaya is the most closely related to the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Even though we're formally connected to the Madhva Sampradaya, they don't recognize gopis, the position of the gopis and Radha Krishna worship. Whereas the Nimbarka, he had that realization. And here in Vrindavan, there are many, many followers of Nimbarka. And he preached, and then he became Keshava Kashmiri in Chaitanya Leela. Now that sounds strange, because Keshava Kashmiri was kind of puffed up and a great scholar, and he was called Digvijay and all that. But he became devotee by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. He became a follower of the Lord. So there are striking similarities between the Gaudiyas and the Nimbarkas. So I'll end on that note. The bell already rang. We have time for, we don't have time, but we can sneak in one or two questions. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, for your wonderful explanation of Tulsi Maharani, and then you covered everything.
I didn't talk about Krishna Rasa Yatra, but forgive me. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, as you were explaining, that it doesn't make sense that everyone is facing, accepting the reaction of the sins of Adam and Eve. It doesn't make sense.
Directions of the sins of
Adam and Eve.
Adam and Eve, right, right.
Because of their mistake, everybody is having.
Yeah, inherited sin.
Yes. So yes. How can we understand that when in Indra's sin was accepted by trees, earth, water, and women? So maybe some one, two, three, maybe all the women of that time accepted that sin, but that is inherited by all the women till now.
Yeah. Right. So there's something called the forest and there's something called the trees. We don't want to confuse forest and trees. For instance, I'll give another example in theology. We don't at all agree, because it's completely unreasonable, of universal resurrection of the body. And the mainstream Western religions, Western modern, you know, current religions, so many types of Christianity, Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, even Catholics, we believe in the universal resurrection of the body. It doesn't work like that. It's completely, it's crazy to think that the body. But there are exceptions where the bodies can be brought back to life. Shukracharya was able to do it if the bodies weren't completely destroyed. Krishna brought back the son of his teacher from Yamaraj. I mean, there are exceptions. That's the tree, but the general rule is ours is a basically reasonable, we can say, theology or philosophy. So in the case that you're mentioning, there are exceptions, as you mentioned, that the sinful reaction was distributed among other different types of living entities by Indra. That was the sinful reaction of his killing his guru, Vishwarup, was it? And then before he insulted, was it Brihaspati, his guru, and made some bad mistake. So he had that power. He's King Indra. He could do like that. So there are exceptions to the rule, but that doesn't sometimes we say the exception that proves the rule. Well, in one sense, if there are exceptions, we have to look at that and try to understand how it's an exception and how the rule still stands. But the general rule is ashes to ashes, dust to dust. When the body is gone, it's gone. The body is gone, not the soul. And the same thing with the sin. Well, the general rule is that we're all individual living entities, and we have our own responsibility for our own karma, and we don't, I gave some exceptions, like the father's debt is there, but at the same time, we don't inherit karma, and we don't inherit by it. But then at the same time, there is a, the way the laws of nature work, that there is an influence on one's parents. But that's also one's own responsibility, because sometimes a kid says, I didn't ask for you to be my mother and father, but you did ask. In a previous lifetime, we acted in such a way that we're going, we're creating a particular body. That means we're also creating our destiny, that we'll have a particular mother and father. So there are these nuances. The most important principle is that devotional service transcends these laws, as stated in Brahma Sangeetam. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bachan. Okay, one more quick question, quick answer, if somebody has something. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, you said there's God's will, I mean Krishna's will, so I'm just wondering, are there two levels of destiny where we're playing out something over here, and then, like, there are many examples of saints getting, like, getting angry at themselves or feeling repenting. And also you mentioned in the Tulsi story where they got cursed in Goloka Vrindavan, so that's actually just like a divine play. Maybe you can elaborate on like Krishna's pastimes happening and how we're playing out.
There's no way I can elaborate on anything right now. This is the time it doesn't permit. I didn't quite, it was an interesting question about playing out two destinies. Could you elaborate a little on what you meant by that?
I'm not so clear myself, but like, for the example, in Goloka Vrindavan, where Sudama got cursed and he came down here, so that was actually a curse, but on another level, it was just Krishna's pastime.
Well, Krishna, he can either, there's something called a miracle, right? Where you can, Krishna can break the laws of nature. Even a very advanced mystic could violate the laws of nature. And I forget what that's called. But Krishna often works within the framework that he established. And so he apparently material destiny is there. Maharaj Parikshit curses, he offends Samak Rishi, and then Sringi curses Maharaj Parikshit. This is all seems material. But at the same time, as you're pointing out, it's the will of the Lord. Now there's two wills of the Lord. One is what the Lord wills. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord, right? But that doesn't mean that the Lord wants everything to happen that he allows to happen. Mm. But there's another will of the Lord where he wants to see these things come out. And some of the leelas, mostly where Krishna uses his special devotees to carry that out, that's his desire. And like the battle of Kurukshetra, that was his desire. You couldn't stop it. And Arjuna could become instrument. So Arjuna, on the one hand, you say the two destinies, he had to fight that war because there was so much offense on the part of the Kauravas and etc. And it was their rightful kingdom. That's all material. But at the same time, there's this transcendental aspect that Krishna, he wanted that war. He wanted his devotee to rule the world, Yudhisthira, and like that. So thank you so much for your kind attention. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srinim Bhakacharya ki jai. Srimati Tulsi Devi Shalabhram Srila ki jai. Shri Krishna Rasa Yatra ki jai. Hari Bol.